Hello and welcome to Gin and Spooks. My name's Laura.
I'm Emma.
And what are we talking about today, Emma?
We have some scary stories. Scary stories? Haunting stories? Ghost stories?
Spooky stories. We have stories. All of these stories have been sent in by our lovely listeners. And what are you drinking tonight, Emma?
Currently drinking Copperberg gin and lemonade, a strawberry and lime flavour.
Nice. I've got gin, lemonade, and then some of that leftover elderflower cordial that we used for that cocktail a few weeks ago.
Ooh,
I was thinking about this earlier. Yeah, it's nice. I was thinking about this earlier that I think you can kind of tell how well me and you are doing it with money based on what drinks we're drinking when we record. So sometimes we've made a fancy cocktail and sometimes, like tonight, it's like, this is just shit that I had in the cupboard.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So I'll go first.
Okay.
So my first little bunch of stories is from my friend Hester. Hello, Hester. So I know Hester because we both used to work at Alton Towers. So most of Hester's stories are based around Alton Towers. Now, I don't know if all of our listeners are as local as we are, but Alton Towers is a theme park in the Midlands of the UK. In the Midlands of the UK. In the Midlands, in the UK. and essentially, Alton Towers has this big house in the middle of it. I mean, it kind of looks more like a castle than a house, but it's not a castle. It's the towers. It's not a castle. It's not a castle. And then it used to be a family that lived there throughout the ages, the Earl of Shrewsbury and his family. So the 15th Earl of Shrewsbury was making his way home to the towers when his cart was stopped by an old beggar woman. When he refused to help her, she cursed him, saying, "With every branch of the old oak tree that falls, a member of the Earl's family will die." The same night, there was a huge storm, which caused a branch of this oak tree to fall. That night, a member of the Earl's family suddenly and mysteriously died. He then ordered his servants to chain up the oak to prevent any further branches from falling. This tree still exists, and it's obviously, it used to be part of the grounds of Alton Towers. Now it's just off a little footpath in the area. It's just this big old oak tree that's still got all these chains on it. Now, whether it actually is chained up because he got cursed, or whether it was just such a lovely big oak tree that they didn't want anything happening to it, who knows? But it is still there. So Alton Towers, the house itself, is quite... it's been around for a very long time. Loads of families have lived there and died there. And there's this legend of the curse, which anyone who's been on Hex will know the legend. And Hex tells it a lot better than I've just told it. So Hex the Ride, you go in through what used to be the main entrance door of the towers. Have you been on Hex?
I have, yeah.
Cool. And then you queue through what used to be like the portrait gallery. Then you go into a couple of different rooms with like screens, and it tells the story better than I do. Then you go into this room called the Octagon. Now, that bit is obviously, it's octagon shaped, hence the name. And they play some music, and there's like a drafty curtain and all sorts of stuff. All sorts of pretend ghosty nonsense. However, this part of the ride, or the building itself, because it is part of the old building, is actually pretty haunted. So Hester, my lovely friend, she used to work on Hex, and now she's got some stories from when she used to work there. There were a group of us in the Octagon of Hex, in a circle around the pillar in the centre of the room. The host asked if anyone was there. Straight away, there were hostile reactions in the environment, such as banging, and people felt chills on their shoulders. We sensed the hostility. You could feel it in the air. And then the host asked if the spirit wanted us to leave. Next thing I know, a handful of stones or pebbles hit me in the forehead. No one was in the middle of the circle, and the host confirmed that he was at the top of the stairs on the opposite side of the pillar, so it couldn't possibly have been from him. I had marks and scars on my face for a week or so after. So like, in the Octagon, shit being fucked up. Once again, we were in the Octagon of Hex, and we were sitting in a circle around the pillar. It is by far the most active place in the whole of Alton Towers. We were approximately 5 minutes into asking the spirits if anyone was there, and a response was received by the person next to me. They became really hot and frustrated, and then seconds later felt really faint and slumped with her head forward. I then also started to flare up and started uncontrollably crying for no reason. I just couldn't stop, and everyone was asking me why I was crying. I simply just kept responding with, "I don't know, I don't know." My crying lasted for a further minute or so, maybe. Then I just suddenly stopped, and the circle was broken. Nothing further happened that night. How weird.
I mean, why do I always have my back to, like, my bedroom door? Because I'm like,
freak, man.
Yeah. I don't know, like, let me move on my side, because I'm getting suspicious.
Don't be suspicious. Okay, so, as Hester said, the Octagon is the, like, spookiest place in Hex. So, also, ride staff often hear footsteps when they're the only person in there. Lights often switch off and on when they're trying to either start up the ride or close down. Like, they've turned all the lights off in the ride. They go do their final check and notice some lights are back on. Oh, I was really creeped out by what this black shape was behind me then, but it's the fucking sofa. For God's sake. Okay, so I've got one more Alton Towers one from Hester that involves the actual house themselves. In the ballroom of the towers, we were sitting in a circle with two hosts this time asking if anyone was there. Nothing happened for a while, and then all of a sudden, clear as day, a female figure popped up just behind the circle by the fireplace. The whole group saw it. We all shit ourselves and broke the circle. Our screaming scared the spirit away. That would fucking get me, though. If you're all sitting and asking to contact the spirits, and all of a sudden a figure pops up and then disappears. Like,
nah. Just got chills, man. Just got chills. I'll be like, you know what? Not today, Satan.
Not today. No, I know. So, like, if anywhere's going to be haunted, it's going to be somewhere like Alton Towers, because that house has been around for centuries. And apparently there used to be settlements there even before, like, the house was built. Like, it's old as balls. So, I've never... Hex has always given me the heebie-jeebies, like, even as a child. The first time I went on it, I didn't actually make it through the pre-shows to the ride because I was that distraught. We had to go out via a fire escape. Please bear in mind, I was like 7. But I was just so freaked out by the whole thing. Even as an adult, I get weird feelings going around there. Or yeah. Say...
The heebie-jeebies.
Like, I'd feel uncomfortable if I had to walk across park on my own at night in the dark, like across in front of the towers. Luckily, I worked on the complete opposite side of the park, so I didn't have to go anywhere near it that often. But so if anywhere's going to be haunted, it is Alton Towers. So that was my Alton Towers stories from Hester. Thank you, Hester.
Thank you.
So I've got a really small story from my sister, Ellie. She said she doesn't even think it was good enough for the podcast, but it made me feel uncomfortable, so I thought I'd go with it.
Okay.
So Ellie is my little sister. And we lived in France for a bit. So Ellie actually went to primary school in France, the second half of primary school. So this is in France. So when Ellie was in primary school, in about year 5, they had art class in a separate building to the toilets. So if you needed the toilet during class, you were allowed to go in pairs because it was a little bit of a walk away. One day, Ellie and her friend Gabriella went to the toilet together. So they walked over to the building with the toilets in and down the stairs to the corridor where the toilets were. Everyone else in the school was in class, so the whole building and the grounds they were walking over to get to the block were all really, really quiet. They went into the toilets and picked 2 cubicles next to each other when all of a sudden they hear a man's voice say, "Hello?" So they responded, being like, "Hi, who's this?" And the voice just kept repeating, "Hello, it's Maximilian." They kept asking each other if it was them talking or if they were like pranking each other. But then they were like, "Well, it's obviously not me because it's a man's voice you can hear." They tried to get more answers out of the voice, but it literally just kept repeating, "Hello, and it's Maximilian." So they knew every single child that would have had access to that building, and none of them were called Max or Maximilian. What made it even stranger was that the voice they were hearing was very clearly speaking in English with an English accent, and it was very clearly a man, so not a boy. They didn't have any English-speaking male teachers at that school. So they then finished what they were doing and ran outside the toilets to see if anyone was there, but no one was there. And there was no way anyone could have gotten through any of the doors quickly and quietly enough for them to not be able to spot them or hear them, they were both incredibly freaked out by it and they ran back to class. How freaky is that though? Because you're so vulnerable. Because you're so vulnerable when you're going for a wee, aren't you? And then just to hear a random man's voice. Because
as soon as she said it, I was like, I just can't cope with this shit, man. I just can't cope. I hate it.
I know.
Like, I don't mind horror films and stuff, but when people start saying scary stories, I'm like, no, tell it to fuck off. Tell it, you know, we're closed today.
Because at first I was like, oh, it could just have been coming through like air vents or something, but they knew every single kid that would have access to that block.
Yeah,
they knew, and like I said, it was a man's voice, not a boy's voice. They didn't know anyone called Maximilian. They didn't know anyone, any men that would be speaking in that kind of voice in the school. Like, makes me think there was someone trapped in the air vents, and then that freaks me out even more. Because
what would you say?
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Could you imagine? I literally be like, don't look at it, don't look at it, don't look at it. That's all I can tell myself. And then be like, leave, don't look in the mirror. I'm like, just wash your hands and go.
I'm not gonna sleep tonight.
I'm not gonna sleep tonight.
Okay, so my next one is from friend of the podcast, Jody. She's the one that recommended Armin Myers, the cannibal, to me. Hi, Jody. So Jody was at her mum's house a few months ago when she got a call from her boyfriend, Matt, who was working from home. He was calling her to ask where she was and was surprised when she responded saying that she was at her mum's house. And he was like, really like, you've not just come home yet. You've not come home? And she's like, no, I'm at my mum's. He said he had just seen a woman with a ponytail in her hair and a jacket on walk into the bedroom. He walked into the bedroom and checked, but no one was there. He said he had full-on seen a person walk into the bedroom, but no one was there. Around this time as well, they were also getting a weird amount of birds flying into their windows.
Oh, no.
So Jodie says her mum is quite spiritual and they'd been meaning to cleanse the house since they first moved in, so now seemed like the perfect time to do it. Apparently, a way of getting rid of negative spirits is to burn a black candle all the way down. And because Matt was the one who had seen the spirit, he had to be the one to do it. So Matt asked the ghost very nicely if it could leave, lit a black candle and let it burn all the way down to the bottom. So that was in January. And since then, they have had no more instances of hauntings. And the amount of birds hitting their windows has also significantly reduced. How weird is that?
Oh, God.
That makes it scarier somehow. I mean, but like he full on believed he had seen her. Like,
oh, no. I literally would have walked in there and gone, hello. And if no one responded or something did respond, I'd just leave. Just like, but, okay, I'm leaving.
Burn the house down.
I love you.
You would just think, like, I don't know, would you just think, like, I feel like Matt and Jody are quite, they're like me and Eamon, like they like to prank each other. So that's why, I'm sure that's why he rung her, just to check that she wasn't hiding under the bed or anything, like taking the piss. Because you'd be able to hear her, wouldn't you, if she was in the house on the phone to you. Or you'd be able to hear on the phone that she was whispering or whatever. So.
I am like proper freaked. I'm like dreading going to bed because I'm going to be like with the covers up for my face just going, oh my God, please leave me alone.
I've got cats.
Oh, I'm not afraid to use them.
You're definitely just going to have to let Disenchantment play all night or something. Just,
I have been doing, and then like I wake up and I'm like, this is not the episode I was watching last night. Then I remember that I forgot to turn my TV off. So I'll have to go back.
I've been rewatching Disenchantment and I've just finished series one and started series two. And there's the last episode of series one, the first episode of series two, I just do not remember ever seeing before. And I'm just like, what? Oh, that makes sense now from whatever happened in the rest of series two and three. Like, I just have no memory of these episodes. I don't know why. Anyway, so my fourth and final listener story is Eamon's, located at a place called Overstrand Hall. So Overstrand Hall is a country house in Overstrand, Norfolk, designed by a guy called Edwin Lutyens for a guy called Charles William Mills, who was the second Baron of Hillingdon and a partner in Glyn Mills & Co. Bank. It was built between 1899 and 1901 and is currently a Grade 2 listed building. The Mills family used Overstrand as a weekend residence, preferring their homes Hellingdon Court and Dorton House as their main residences. So it's like over 100 years old, this house. It's described as a quite remarkable building. The house is of a complex courtyard plan with a varied range of materials. So there's stone with half timbering, flint with black brick and tile. During the First World War, the hall was used as a military hospital, and the Mills family then went on to sell the house in 1932 to become a home for people that were recovering from an illness or like treatment that they'd had. So essentially it was a war hospital, and then kind of like a rehab clinic. So
yeah,
where you'd go after hospital or whatever. So currently the hall is used as a residential activity center. I actually went there in year five. It's one of those places where like you go with school and you stay there for a few nights and you do shit like rock climbing and kayaking and looking for rocks on the beach, because Overstrand and that coast of Norfolk's got loads of like fossils and shit. Did you ever go on any of those trips?
I think so, but I don't have like a really good memory of it.
No, I have very, very small memories of this. One of my memories of this hall actually was that you were told that to keep a pair of shoes, a jumper and a torch by your bed at all times, just in case in the middle of the night there was a fire alarm. And apparently I was the only kid in my school that actually did it. The nerd that I am.
Everyone's like, nah, it's bollocks, mate. You're not going to wake me up. And you're just like, I'll just pack this ready.
I was on the bottom bunk. So I had this little pile of stuff by my bed, by my head. My theory, like when someone asked me about it, I was like, well, that's what they've told me to have, just in case. I don't want to be stuck outside in bare feet in the middle of the night, do I? So if there's a fire alarm, I'm prepared. Anyway, funnily enough, because it's a small world, Eamon went on to work at this place. Like, Eamon's only a couple of years older than me, so obviously there was no overlap when he was working there in his late teens, early 20s to when I went there. But these stories, these small stories, are from Eamon. So he says that they had a lot of unexplained happenings in the main house that they never discovered the source of. They didn't even try to look into a lot of them further. But these were things such as footsteps stamping down the corridors when no one else was there. We experienced this during fire drills when the buildings were empty. So they were in the process of checking the buildings were empty, and they would hear stamping footsteps down the corridors. This was experienced by several team members. There's also these same corridors, you'd really get the sense that someone was following you, like right behind you, as if they were kind of breathing on your neck and almost touching you.
Oh, pervert, no. This is like, I don't want your perverted heavy breathing on my neck, thank you, piss off.
No. Doors was quite often open and closed of their own accord with no drafts. But every time anyone says doors open and closing of their own accord, but there was no drafts, I'm always like, yeah, but is there a draft somewhere? Or have you got something hanging on the back of the door? But still, a little bit creepy, but I'm a bit like, yeah. So they had this heavy, big, long table that they called the knight's table, like a huge like banquet table thing. And quite often overnight, that would have shifted by a few feet, even though no one had been in that room.
Oh, no. Oh, I hate this and I love it at the same time. I'm like, no.
Oh, no. So because obviously they'd have kids there on overnight trips with their teachers, all of the staff had to do night shifts every so often. So one employee said they heard screaming coming from one of the rooms during a night shift. So they ran in to check to make sure everyone was okay and no one was in trouble, but no one was in that room.
Oh no, that fuck one, off.
That one's actually brought fuck tears off. In my eyes.
I've literally got tears in my eyes right now. I just like my automatic reaction is to like just cry it out. Oh no.
Okay. So this is
what would you do if you screamed back?
Imagine, I might try that. If I ever hear random screaming, I'll just like, back at them.
Like, you know, dominate it and just be like, this is my town. This is my house. This is my street.
This is my house. One of my favourite wrestlers, she doesn't wrestle anymore, but that used to be her thing in the ring. She'd scream, this is my house. Anyway. So, however, they had all that shit went on. However, there was one experience they did test and they couldn't explain what was going on. It's the mystery.
I'm not ready.
It's the mystery of the large dorm room. I'll put this. I've got a picture of this bedroom and then a picture of the house. So I'll put those on the blog and the Instagram. The largest room in the corner of the main house, and it could fit around 12 children in there, like on bunk beds. So they had one group of kids complaining that they'd woken up in the morning and they were all freezing cold because the windows were open. The teachers confirmed that they hadn't opened the windows in the night either. Like, no one would own up to opening the windows. This same thing happened for a few groups of children from different schools. Even on cold nights where you just wouldn't think to open a window, like you wouldn't need to open a window. So Eamon did his night duty shift. So they closed the windows in the room, locked the door, sat outside the corridor where that room was. No one entered or left the room or the corridor. Eamon had the key. They left the room empty. They go in the next morning and the windows were open.
No. I'm literally like, there's a tear escaping my eye right now. Oh, no.
Yeah, so they ended up trying to avoid using that bedroom to put kids in because it just got far too cold and the groups of kids would complain about the cold and they just, it was just not worth the hassle. But like, they full on tested closing the windows, locking them, locking the door. Whew. So that is Overstrand.
Yeah. Oh God, the, you know, these spirits are so inconsiderate.
I know, like, right?
Like, who do you think you are in a building that you do not pay the bills for, opening windows?
I know,
especially like, you know, because kids, like, kids are going to get more freaked out and they're more like in tune to that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I believe.
Oh, I think they are, but it's just, you'd think it was weird, like, the first group that complained about waking up cold in the night because the windows, you'd be like, oh, it was just one of them dicking about. Then the next group of kids, it happens to them in the same room. You'd be like, okay, is it just someone dicking about? But then the more it kept happening, and then the fact that they all tested it, like Eamon proper, made sure that no one went in or out of that room during that night and the windows were still open in the morning. That's just... it's making me cold just thinking about it.
I know, you get like a shiver down your spine and like my mind just instantly goes, get sage, burn it, cleanse.
Ask the spirits nicely to leave. Excuse me, can you leave?
I'm laughing, but I swear to God, if anything happens right, like when I'm sleeping, I'm going to do what I said in the Aliens episode. I will throw my dildo at it. Be gone. Demon, be gone, boss. Well, thank you for scaring the shit out of me.
I'm so sorry, but I'm not sorry, but... oh, gosh.
So, this last story that I'm going to read out is from an old college friend, Ash. He also, you know, expanded my music taste. He was actually the first person to introduce a day to remember to me.
Oh,
so, hi Ash, I haven't spoken to you in a while and I hope you're okay, and also thanks for this story that I'm probably going to shit myself reading out. He's named it Urbexin Experience. Love it. So I'll start by saying I was and still am rather skeptical of the paranormal. However, I still don't understand why or how the events unfolded on this night. This was in late autumn in 2014. A friend and I decided to try outside of the Nottinghamshire border to explore somewhere new, as we had exhausted all the interesting places. We usually set off at 11:30 p.m. to avoid bumping into other people getting caught by on-site security. However, this night we set off about 12 a.m. To get to the complex we wanted to explore, we had to park on the outskirts of a small rural village. From there, it was a 20-minute trek on foot through farmers' fields until we reached a small river which separated the fields and a dense forest. Once over the river, it was another 10-minute walk through the forest until we reached an opening where the partly cloud-covered moon lit up the asylum complex. Seven red brick buildings, all in different states of decay. Each building had its own nameplate dedicated to English trees. The buildings appeared to be analogues of each other. 2 stories high and 18 windows on each floor, with a balcony area in the middle of the second floor. After having a look around the first half of the site, we realised that only 2 buildings were accessible from the ground floor, and these happened to be the most dilapidated buildings. I'm just having a break. I'm really proud that I managed to say that. The rest were completely inaccessible from the ground floor, and even if you could climb to the second story, most windows were shut or smashed, making entry more dangerous than we were willing to put ourselves through. The first accessible building was on the east side of the complex, and after 15 minutes, we had explored all it had to offer, which was dark, cold corridors and rooms that had been stripped bare of all the content and anything else smashed or broken. I don't know why I'm like...
I'm sorry, but I'm scared already.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just... The way he's written this is so good. Like, I'm so... I'm imagining it and it's scaring me. And I'm like, why would you go into an old asylum building in the dark? Like, already I'm like, no, hon, get back.
Because some people are crazy. Sorry, mm-hmm. Yeah. Some people are crazy. Like, some people just want, you know, want to do this kind of shit. And I'm like, I'm just going to stay at home with my two cats and
yep.
go to sleep at 9 o'clock. But anyway, the next building we moved on to was called Birch Suites, which could only be accessed by climbing in through one of the clinic rooms. Inside, similar to the first building we entered, cold, dark and destroyed, very much a ball in an abandoned china shop vibe. After looking through both floors and taking plenty of pictures, we were about to head out until we noticed a crudely cut out piece of plywood on the floor, which was covering a hole. We moved the plywood over to the side, set up timed photos with flash and carefully dropped our cameras into the hole, which we estimated was 1.5 metres deep. When we looked back at the photos we had just taken, we saw that the plywood was covering an entrance into a maintenance tunnel, which went on further than the cameras could see. After discussing whether we should go down into the tunnels and who was going first, I drew the short straw. We dropped down and headed deeper in.
No!
Where would you go?
No! Ash, okay? No! He's so brave. What's wrong with him?
You scared the shit out of me now because you gasped and I was like, oh my god, what?
I'm so sorry. Partly because of what you said and partly because a car went past and shit me up.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I was just like,
okay.
Okay.
So the further we got into the tunnels, we realised it wasn't just a straight tunnel. There's a series of interconnecting corridors linking all of the buildings. The tunnels were as you would expect, seemingly dark, and in the pitch black interior of the Birch Street, closed in with rusting pipes and scattered with cobwebs. Around 50 metres into the tunnel, there was an exit into another building. When we climbed out, it was almost as if we had travelled back in time to when the complex had just closed. The carpets were unstained, the ceiling tiles were mostly all still in place, and besides the paint peeling off the walls, everything seemed to be intact. A true urbexing goldmine. We spent a long time sifting through the ground floor rooms, finding that all the clinic rooms still had the equipment in place, medications in cupboards and clinical charts on the counters. Once we had finished sweeping the ground floor, we made our way up to the second floor. At the top of the stairs, there was a ceiling hatch leading into a loft space which had been left open, and a chair leaning against the wall, allowing access into the hatch.
Fuck off.
Adding that to our to-do list, we headed on into the second floor. From this point is where things started to feel strange. Have a drink break.
Mm-hmm.
And breathe.
I love how scared we both are. And nothing's even happened yet. He's just in a creepy old building and we're already shitting ourselves.
I know. Oh, it's so well written as well. Like, it's genuinely, like, mm-hmm. being author, Ash.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay. The layout of the second floor was different to the first. All the rooms seemed to be bedrooms with the exception of a few bathrooms and a large empty room connecting the two sides of the building. The ambience of this floor felt vastly different to the first. The moonlight shone through the windows, giving everything a bluish tint. And whilst the first floor produced lots of echoes from our actions, this floor did not. A few minutes into our exploration, I noticed a distinct but muffled noise coming from one of the rooms at the end of the corridor. I slowly approached and realised that the noise sounded like that of someone quietly sobbing.
Oh, no.
Just breathe, that's what Emma. I'm doing. Just breathe.
That's what I'm doing right now, quietly sobbing.
I looked over at my friend who had an equally concerned look on his face, which made me realise that it wasn't just my imagination. When I was outside the door, I looked over to my friend again, who, after a brief pause, nodded at me to signal that I should open the door. Why the fuck are you opening the door?
No!
I turned the handle until its lock was fully disengaged and I heard a click which plunged the corridor and room into absolute silence. I waited for what seemed like minutes, waiting for another sound to break the silence, until I plucked the courage to start pushing the door open. I actually can't breathe right now. Opening the door required more force than I anticipated, as if there was a seal holding the door shut, similar to when a door hasn't been opened in so long. The paint on the door frame adheres to the door itself. The opening door triggered a loud noise from the loft area that made my friend and I jump out of our skin, which was followed by apparent footsteps headed in the direction down the corridor towards the top of the stairs.
I'm making some very strange noises.
We both immediately decided we did not want to meet whoever, whatever it was, and ran in the opposite direction further into the building. The layout of the suites are symmetrical, further adding to the confusion of our getaway. Once on the ground floor, we split up a means of finding an exit, and I went to the reception room of the building as my friend tried other clinic rooms. However, all doors I tried were locked and boarded up from the outside. Realising this, we both scrambled for the maintenance tunnel and jumped straight in without hesitation. Only a few moments later, my friend stopped ahead of me and told me that he had put his camera tripod down when checking the windows. Despite the predicament we were in, this was something he definitely didn't want to leave behind, as it was his late grandfather's. I turned around and carefully made my way to the tunnel portal and listened out for any sounds, but there was only the ambience of the tunnel. I climbed out and very carefully made my way to the room where the tripod was, constantly on edge, waiting for footsteps or loud sounds to disturb the eerie quiet. After I got the tripod, I immediately headed straight back to the portal, and as I went to climb in the tunnel, my torch beam scanned past a figure stood only a few paces away from the entrance. In that moment, I could tell it was a female figure in a long pale blue gown with a pale and stern face, but that's all I could see in the fleeting moment. The figure did not speak, but I heard "Get out" resonate through my head so vehemently. I almost froze. Once in the tunnel, the expression on my face told my friend all he needs to know, and we frantically raced back through the labyrinth of tunnels to the exit. Once we made it out of Birch Street, I could see that a low-lying fog had descended on the complex, adding to the foreboding and increasingly disturbing atmosphere. We were running so fast, we made it through the forest and farmers' fields in less than half the time it took to get there, despite the dense vegetation and obstacles. Our journey home was largely silent, except for the sounds of my car navigating the country roads, each of us too immersed in the lingering atmosphere and possibility of what we had just experienced to muster up casual conversation. It was only when I suggested calling at a fast food restaurant that our silence was broken and our minds began to drift back to reality, although I often still wonder about who or what we might have encountered that night. As this experience, we decided to do a bit of research on the complex. As it turns out, the place was called Aston Hall Mental Asylum, which has now unfortunately been knocked down and converted into housing. Not too long ago, a previous patient at the asylum released a book exposing the abuses of the patients and the staff, which included some rather horrific treatments, including the forced injection of truth serum and beatings, ultimately leading to many attempted and sadly some successful suicides. And Ash has provided some pictures of the adventure, which I will add on to when the episode is released. I would add on for everyone to see. But my fucking god, I just like proper shit myself trying to read that. I do have some research as well. A little bit in detail of you know, the building that they went to go and explore. So, do you need a drink break? Are you okay?
I think I'm okay. I'm just thinking, the woman was in a blue dress, which makes you feel like it could be a nurse or something. But
yeah,
like, oh, I can't even think about, I can't even talk about parts of that story because they're freaking me out too much. Like the footsteps in the attic and the sobbing noise and I feel sick.
Fucking hell, Shadow. Jesus, she's got a bell on her and obviously she's springing it. I'm like, what?
Ash, thank you so much for that story. That was incredible.
Yeah, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
I'm guessing that didn't put him off urban exploring, or urbex exploring, whatever he calls it.
Ash, if you obviously listen to this episode, can you let us know that hasn't put you off exploring?
I was going to say that would put me off exploring, but I don't think I'd be up for doing it anyway, especially not at night. Like,
and a braver person than I am, 100%.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like when I was younger, I used to do crazy shit like that, but in broad daylight. So if I got, you know, got stranded somewhere, I'd, you know, I'd be able to get out some somehow or whatever. But that's just like next level.
Oh gosh, the bravery to even go to that place in the first place, let alone climb down into the maintenance tunnels, let alone open that fucking door. Anyway,
yeah. So I'll do a little bit of history about like the building itself, and then I've got some information regarding what actually happened at the hospital when it was open.
Oh,
and then we can breathe because we're it's the end. So Aston Hall Hospital, or Mental Hospital, at the time of the Norman Conquest, Aston-on-Trent was part of the Manor of Weston, which was granted by the Crown to the Earl of Chester. Following the dissolution of monasteries, the manor was granted to Sir William Paget. In 1612, Weston passed on to Anthony Roger by marriage, and 1633, he purchased a house and estate at Aston. In 1648, he sold the estate to Robert Holden of Shardlaw. His descendant, also Robert Holden, was a successful lawyer who replaced the old house with a new red brick, three-story, five-bay mansion in 1735. The house was greatly extended by the addition of a substantial north wing and other improvements by Edward Anthony Holden, who was the High Sheriff of Derbyshire in 1838. Holden's daughter Mary Shuttleworth Bowden was born here in 1840, and she did some charitable work from what I was reading about her.
Nice.
Yeah, good old charitable work, eh?
Yeah.
The estate was sold by the Holdens in 1898 to William Dickon Rittenbottom. Why am I struggling to say that?
Say it again. What is his name? Whittingbottom.
William Dickon Winterbottom.
So he's got Willie, Dick and Bottom in there. Sorry.
Who enlarged the hall in 1907 and engaged Thomas Hayton Newson to redesign the garden. I apparently can't read my writing today. After Winterbottom's death in 1924, it was broken up and the house was sold to Nottingham County Council and became Nottingham Corporation Home for Mental Deficients in about 1930. After joining the National Health Service in 1948, it became known as Aston Hall Hospital. A report published in 2018 referred to the allegations of abuse at the hospital in the 1960s and 1970s. From 1974 to its closure, it was operated by South Derbyshire District Health Authority. The hospital closed in about 1993, and more recently the hall has been restored, renovated and converted into residential apartments.
So it's not actually been demolished, it's actually just been converted into apartments.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Fuck living there with that nurse.
You keep gasping. I keep shaking.
Sorry.
I'm like, what? So essentially, some bits, obviously, if they were able to restore it, they did. And, yeah, basically made apartments out of it, which I'm assuming people live in right now.
Like, this is bringing tears to my eyes again, thinking of the people that are in an apartment where Ash saw that figure.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't breathe.
Yeah.
If anyone's out there that lives in these apartments, please can you send in any ghost stories you've got?
Yeah.
Please. We'll
read them out in broad daylight in the sunshine when I'm drinking a pint, because I can't cope with this shit.
No, next time we do a listener's story episode, we're recording it in the garden in the sun, like...
with our backs to each other, so like we could see like both angles.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh god.
But yeah, so that's the, you know, the history of the building. So I'm just going to go a little bit further into this report that was released.
Yeah.
So more than 100 people have come forward with allegations of physical and sexual abuse at Aston Hall, Derbyshire, in the 60s and 70s. the claims centering on Dr. Kenneth Milner and his use of a truth drug therapy. Solicitors acting for some of the victims said a settlement of at least £8,000 each had been agreed with the Department of Health. Aston Hall is in a number of guises, was a hospital for both children and adults with behavioural issues from 1926 until 2004. Allegations first emerged in 2011, but former patients came forward in 2016 and Derbyshire Police launched an investigation. More than 130 people have been interviewed as part of the inquiry. Police said they have recorded 33 physical assaults and 40 sexual assaults allegations.
That's really sad.
Yeah, like, it's just awful.
Yeah.
An independent report in 2018 found children were allegedly given a truth drug, stripped, abused, and put in straitjackets.
Oh, no.
So, sodium amytal was given to shell-shocked soldiers in World War II to release repressed memories, but it was never approved for use on children. The report also noted the use of straitjackets and Dr. Milner's patchy record keeping, both were against standard practice. Police said Dr. Milner would have been questioned over rape and cruelty claims if he was still alive.
Mm.
Other staff members accused of physical abuse have either been eliminated from the inquiry or have died. Some could not be identified.
Oh, gosh.
So, did a bit of research into the truth drug.
Yeah.
Amoborbital, or also known as sodium amytal, is a drug that is barbiturate. Well, yeah.
I think that's how you say it.
Derivative. It has a sedative hypnotic properties. It is a white crystalline powder with no odor and a slightly bitter taste. It was first synthesized in 1923 in Germany.
Hmm.
When given slowly by intravenous route, sodium amytal has a reputation for acting as a so-called truth serum. Under the influence, a person will divulge information that under normal circumstances they would block. This was most likely due to loss of inhibition. As such, the drug was first employed clinically by Dr. William Blackwen at the University of Wisconsin to circumvent inhibitions in psychotic patients. The use of sodium amytal and as a truth serum has lost credibility due to the discovery that a subject can be coerced into having a false memory of the event.
Oh.
And the drug may be used to interview patients with catatonic mutism, sometimes combined with caffeine to prevent sleep.
Oh, that sounds cruel.
And that is the end of all of that. Basically, if you just search up sodium amytal, obviously on the Wikipedia page, the it's helped like get confessions out of people that have committed like murder.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the guy, but essentially he ended up like killing his girlfriend, and it wasn't made clear as to why he had done that. Like, yeah, there was no actual motivation behind it. So they gave him the truth drug, and essentially he explained everything and what made him tip over the edge to kill her.
Yeah.
I think some people have committed suicide by it, because if you mix it with alcohol, it creates a deadly chain reaction within your body and you die.
Oh, like, shit.
It's just an automatic reaction.
Yeah.
And yeah, shit. That is the end of all my lovely information.
Oh my God. I need to take a minute to compute all of that. I hope that doctor is burning in hell for what he's done, and not the fun kind of hell that we always joke about, like with Krampus and his nice house. Like, I hope he's actually burning in genuine hell for all the horrors he unleashed on those people and children.
Yeah, because all those children now would have, you know, they're adults.
Yeah.
And they're going to be so traumatized and so impacted by what they had to go through.
Yeah.
And it's just not right. It's just not acceptable at all.
He's just preyed on the vulnerable. Yeah.
Yeah. Abuse of power, abuse of, you know, vision.
Yeah. It sounds like if anything's going to be haunted, that a place where so much trauma went on is bound to be. Because I kind of, like, I'm still not 100% sure if I believe in ghosts and that, because I've never had a full-on experience to make me think, oh yes, definitely. But if I was to believe in it, I believe a place full of a lot of emotional trauma and loss or very strong emotions, is I kind of feel like that is a place that's going to be haunted. Like,
yeah,
I believe more in ghosts being like maybe an old recording of an intense emotion rather than anything else. But then you can get
it's like negative emotion, like negativity. Like, yeah, it draws it in.
Yeah, creates the energy.
Yeah, it's such like, it's like a pungent, you know, feeling, thought, emotion, like, yeah, whatever you want to call it. It's so strong that you can't deny, yeah, feeling like that, especially in, you know, if you're in that environment.
Yeah, Jesus. I just can't get over how incredible Ash's story was.
Oh, it was so good. So, so good. I like, I enjoyed reading it and, like, you know, speaking about it and stuff, but
yeah,
still scared the shit out of me. Like,
would you rather spend the night in the haunted room at Overstrand, or would you rather, I was gonna say, would you rather go to Ash's asylum, but I think I'd rather spend the night at Overstrand than spend even an hour in that asylum.
Yeah, I think I would too, like, in the,
yeah,
Overstrand. I am too scared. I'll openly admit that. Yeah. I am too scared to be spending my time in mental asylums. No.
Oh, any old supposedly haunted building at night? No, thank you. Unless it was like a hotel or something, then maybe I'd spend the night in a haunted hotel, supposedly haunted hotel. But I would not spend a night, yeah, in that room alone, and I would probably sleep with the light on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I'll have, yeah, the TV on.
Yes. Yes.
Stop blasting. Blasting the electric.
We would be like the worst ghost hunters. If we were to ever actually go ghost hunting, we'd be the worst, because I think we'd just be like, no, not going in there. Yeah. Too scared. Like,
I don't want to, like, really, you know, tempt fate with that stuff as well. Like, I don't want to, like, make something, yeah, bad happen by accident, or, yeah, you know, because I'm playing with something that I don't fully understand.
Oh, yeah, me neither. Like, I'd never have a Ouija board in my house. Mm-mm. Like,
not a chance.
So, like, all these places that we talk about, like all the haunted pubs that we talked about, I will happily go and have a drink in all of those. In fact, I'd love to do a tour of supposedly haunted pubs, but it would be afternoon beverages, so I could then go to my safe travel lodge, like, brand new hotel room, and sleep soundly. Or, like, because I know we've got some, like, haunted castles episodes planned and haunted houses, maybe, I don't know, and I'd happily go visit them during the day, but that's it, during the day, surrounded by other tourists. Like, yeah, that's it, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I'm scared of the dark. Like, yeah. You know, I've got a really bad fear of the dark, and, you know, what could be in the dark.
Yeah,
so not a chance would I be going, like, into places like that in the middle of the night.
Nope.
No. But I would rather spend a night in Overstrand Hall.
Yeah. Than go anywhere.
Then even a minute in an abandoned asylum.
Like, Overstrand does sound very freaky, and it gave me absolute chills. However, I think if you're in a dorm room with loads of other people,
yeah,
in a bed, somehow bed is safe. That's what my brain tells me. Bed is safe. Like, demons can't get through your duvet. So,
demons can't get through your duvet.
I don't know. Oh, God. Now, because of these conversations, I'm going to end up getting really hot in bed tonight, but be too scared to stick my feet out the end in case something gets them.
I know. It's just, oh. But I definitely believe that, you know, obviously, you know, spirits and ghosts are, like, real, because I've had my own experiences,
yeah,
but it's just not something that I want to, like, piss about with at all. It's something that I'm like, no, it's so like scary. I'm like, no thanks, I'm okay.
Nope. Yeah, I think that's partly why I definitely at the moment don't particularly believe in ghosts, is because my brain is very much like, nope, that's something logical, you're not scared of it, just because I don't have the energy to be scared of things.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a good mindset to have, though.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose.
Like, not today, I'm too tired.
Yeah, no. No. Like, that was just the wind. Right, I'm fine. Or it's just the heating making noises. It's just next door, just the wind, mm-hmm. just Eamon. I'm excited to have cats because that's something else to blame random noises on.
Yeah. What's today's lesson? Not to go and abandon middle of the night.
Yeah, pretty much. I can't. Today's lesson is you've got to have proper strong guts to go urban exploring properly.
Ooh,
chills.
No. Chills. Electrifiers. Insert nervous laughter here.
Yeah. There's been a lot of nervous laughter tonight. Like,
yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm getting tired, but I don't want to sleep.
This is the scariest episode we've done, I think.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this one. But next time we'll have to do it in broad daylight, so I'm not freaking the fuck out.
Yes. So thank you for listening to what could possibly be our scariest episode yet. Please head to our Instagram, which is @ginandspooks, for some photos to accompany the stories. We will also put these on our blog, which is ginandspooks.wordpress.com.
If you enjoyed listening to these stories and think you've got scary stories of your own, please email them over to us at ginandspooks@gmail.com or send us a message on Instagram @ginandspooks. And if you have any of your own drink suggestions for later episodes, again, please email them over to us or send us a direct message on Instagram.
Yeah, thanks for listening. I hope you can sleep tonight because we're not going to be sleeping tonight.
No, I will probably message you in the middle of the night going, I can't sleep or I'll get it.
Bye.
Bye.